Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Well, all right, welcome back to the Survival and Basic Badass Podcast, Kevin and Chuck. Today, we're going to talk about good fences. It's kind of a broad idea, but basically, since I moved down to the South, one of the things that I really noticed is people set up, I want to say almost garden plots. They want to attract wildlife. They want to make their hunting area, their property conducive to attracting game and wildlife and making it a habitat that they want to hang around in, which in turn ends up, you know, bringing in your food supply and basically stretching your supplies and resources and, you know, making your life a lot easier when it comes to getting meat. You know, as men, as preppers, we like meat, right? You know, I know there's some girls that listen to this show and I'm the bad guy, you know, alienating and coming up with ideas like that. But, you know, we're meat eaters, right? That's kind of a thing here. We talk about meat, we talk about good things and, you know, anyway. So now I also know on the flip side of that, when you have gardens, your entire life and efforts are put into keeping wildlife out and keeping them away and, you know, driving them away from what's going on. So it is kind of a contradiction. And that's, I guess, where that title Good Fences comes in, you know, because you do want distinct areas where you separate the two. But that said, there is a big benefit to bringing in animals and meat. And, you know, I know we've talked in the past about how, you know, in a real shit hits the fan kind of scenario, everybody's like, oh, well, I can go bag a deer and I'm never going to go hungry, you know? And, right. That population is going to thin out and it's not going to be the long-term resource, but one, it can be the resource for right now. Free cheap meat is a cool thing. And knowing how to butcher and take care of your meat is a good thing. We did do an episode on how to butcher a deer. There was a great video that I had gotten that I would be happy to, you know, pass along the information of where you could get it. I'll maybe try and get it in the show notes if I can dig it up. But definitely, if you're really looking for a good way, good video on how to butcher your meat, shoot me an email at preppingbadass@gmail.com. I'd be happy to, you know, get you in touch with the right information. But that said, it's still having a good environment, and especially smaller animals, squirrels, rabbits, that kind of thing. Those things are going to last a little bit longer. You know, they're not the first go-to that people go for when they're, you know, scared and trying to venture into hunting for the first time. So having an environment conducive to these animals could really be the difference in extending your food supply, you know, for many months. So with that, let's kind of get into it. Kevin had some really good ideas on things we could set up to kind of attract what makes a good environment for, you know, wildlife, for animals.
Yeah.
Like, what are animals looking for?
Yeah, there's three main things that animals are gonna want, you know, when they want them to visit your property. And it's the same thing, three things that people want, you know, food, water, and shelter.
You know, there was one more people, that people want, but yeah. Okay.
Now let's start with food. So, wildlife, you know, especially, white-tailed deer, they love things like, clover, you know, annual legumes like field peas, cereal grains like oats, rye, wheat. You know, these are all things, corn, these are all things that we grow, that at least that I grow, you know, here and there, different seasons. I try different things.
They like but, apple trees.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, fruit trees are a great one. Deer, keeping deer out of your garden is a big deal, you know, because they'll hop right over a 4-foot fence, you know?
Yes.
So I try and keep my food garden really close to the house. You know what I mean? That way I can keep my eye on it. I can look out the window and see what's messing around out there. So planning food specifically for wildlife, you know, is not a bad idea. Yeah. I used to go crazy trying to like keep a nice, like clean lawn, you know, like an idiot, just grass and get rid of the clovers and the weeds and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
Now I've letting clover basically take over the whole yard. I've got more clover than I do grass. You know, and clover used to be something that was considered like a good, healthy lawn. What was it? Weed killer company that was giving everybody cancer?
Monsanto, but it's Roundup.
Roundup, right.
Roundup, so what you're looking for.
There was a big campaign. When they came out with Roundup, it was great because it killed everything except for grass. And there's a big campaign to convince people that clover were weeds because the Roundup was killing clover. But really, you know, for hundreds of years, people intentionally grew clover. You know, that draws a lot of deer. Rabbits love it. Bees love it. Of great wildlife go for the clove. Yep. You know, and in some places, clover will grow, you know, all year round, you know. Down, you know, real far down south, it'll get too hot for a couple of months. And up north, it'll get, you know, too cold for a couple of months. But the truth is, clover, you know, grows great most of the year in most climates. So, I mean, it's a great food source and it's real easy to grow. It's not even something that you have to, you know, you can go out and plant a whole field of clover for, you know, real cheap and it'll grow by itself. You don't have to be out there, you know, watering it and messing with it all the time.
Right.
Another thing that attracts wildlife, you have to have a good water source.
Yes.
I've got a nice little stream on the back of my property. A lot of people don't have a stream or a creek or a pond or anything, but you know, you can set up water sources, you can set up watering tanks, and you can set up you know, even small, like, kids pools, you know, those, $10 swimming pools that you get for the little kids on, you know, from the dollar store or Dollar General or something, you know, you can fill those up and leave them out, and you'll be surprised the amount of animals that come out to get a drink when you're in an area that doesn't have a lot of water around.
Right.
One of the other things that we want to talk about, though, is shelter. Animals require a lot of shelter, specifically when it comes to white-tailed deer. You want to have a couple of things that that are going to attract them, be desirable for them. So you want, like, travel corridors. You want to have a way that the animal can get through, you know, get to your property from other properties without, like, having to cross roads or having to cross, you know, streams or anything like that. You want to have them – you want to make it so that it's accessible for larger animals to be coming through your property. You know, make right. it part of their daily or weekly stop, you know. A lot of white-tailed deer have, like, a area that they stick to, and they kind of migrate through that area, you know, every day, every couple of days. And having access to your property from other properties is a good way to kind of facilitate them coming through. Now, you want to have bedding areas too, which you know, generally is higher grass areas. I don't like that stuff on my property. You know, it attracts insects, it attracts ticks. I live rodents, like, right in all sorts of stuff. I live right in you know, Lyme disease central in this area, you know, so I try and keep the lawns shorter. You know, teach their own, I guess. I don't hunt a lot of white-tailed deer. I honestly prefer my gardens, but I know a lot of the guys listening to the podcast are big hunters. So that's kind of why we're doing this episode, right?
Right.
Now, one of the things that that deer love is, all wildlife love, is the forest edges, you know? And a lot of us have these forest edges that are, it goes like right from trees right to grass, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not conducive, because it kind of startles animals. You know what I mean? To go right from cover out into the open, and you'll see a lot of big bucks will wait at the edge of the forest, yes, until dusk before they'll come out. But you can make a more gradual distinction between the two, you know? Go from trees to shrubbery, from, you know, trees to, like, blackberry bushes, blueberry bushes, raspberries, you know, that sort of stuff. And it takes a little bit of work to kind of keep that, you know, gradual change going. So, I mean, it's just something to keep in mind that, you know, might be a little bit more conducive to bringing some of the wildlife in onto your property.
Yeah. One of the things I learned, you know, as a trapper, is that nature loves other nature. And that's kind of, you know, what you're getting at is, you know, they want to be around other stuff, and because it makes them feel safe. And also, that's where the food's going to be, right? You like to eat little animals, or even bigger animals. Bigger animals like to eat littler animals, and little animals eat even smaller animals. And just throwing up, like, the wood pile or whatever in the middle of nowhere, you know, they always said it with trapping, if you look out into a field, where is the best place to set a trap? And they're like, look for the highest point kind of thing. And it's going to be, you know, a stump in the middle of the field, an old tractor laying there, that broken farm implement. Because when you go out there, that's where the mice are going to be. That's where, you know, and so the animals are going to come over and check out, hey, what can I eat over here? And each thing progressively, as animals get bigger, are looking for that environment. They're looking for something that's going to stand out, but it's going to attract little things, because everything, like you said, is looking for shelter. You know, they're looking for that area. But also, you know, the water source seems to be a great one. I'm kind of torn back and forth on whether I dig a big pond. I end up, it rains quite a bit where I am. And I end up having, like, I have a big shooting lane that's kind of, I dug down kind of into the clay to kind of make a long, narrow alley. And it ends up pooling up water in there. And it's pretty awesome because I have the nice backstop set up. And when I go out there, that's where the deer, you know, I come out, I see the deer just sitting there in the middle of my
shooting range.
Yeah. Like, hey, you know, this is where we want to be because I have big puddles of water. But, you know, it's like, hey, let me come out and get a drink. And what's cool is it's an opening where I have woods on either side. And so the animals feel kind of safe and protected, you know, because they don't kind of recognize, hey, I'm in the middle of a big opening here, because they see woods all around them. You know, it doesn't kind of connect as much as a big field.
Right.
But it's like a little break in the woods and they stop to get their drink, you know. So that's something to consider. Also, but the big food plots just for animals, you know, they do the turnips and the bigger things and like you said, lagoons and stuff like that. And just, you know, running the tractor with a tiller or, you know, breaking up a section and throwing down some seed is so easy to do. A lot easier when you have a tractor and a tiller. But even so, digging up a long row and throwing some feed in there. And you can also kind of pick some things that are going to come back year after year. I'm sure the clover is going to, you know, keep coming back, things like that. You can really, you know, have an environment that costs you almost nothing to maintain. And, you know, it can really bring in a lot of wildlife. And, you know, if the animals come and eating it all is serving a good purpose, you know. I know some states it's not appropriate to feed animals and attract them in like that. We won't talk about that.
There's definitely laws about baiting animals. I know a lot of people that are hunters that bait animals on their property just because, not to hunt them, but just to watch them. And they go to different properties to hunt. And that's, you know, that's definitely, that's fine. But in a bad situation, you know, it might not be bad to have animals being comfortable coming through your property on a regular basis. You know, if you can't get to the grocery store, then nobody's going to be getting to your property to make sure that you're not, baiting deer and things like that. I'm just putting that out there. I'm not saying break your local laws, but, you know, something to keep in mind. And when it comes to like small game, like you were saying, Chuck, there's ways to kind of facilitate small game. One of the things that I've made this mistake myself is that when I'm clearing land, I usually just get a big fire going with all the extra brush that goes through, you know, that's coming out. But those brush piles, you might want to save, you know, one or two of those. Now you want to stick to like smaller brush piles, and that'll attract things like woodchucks, rabbits, things like that. But you don't want to like push your brush into a pile with a backhoe or something, because it'll pile up a lot of dirt around it. And that sort of brush pile is going to attract foxes, raccoons, predators that you don't necessarily want on your property, especially if you're raising chickens or ducks or, you know, whatever it is you guys like to have around. Having the coyotes and foxes and things around isn't really great. I love duck, you know. I love rabbit. I love those kinds of smaller animals, you know, that might be on your property.
I think the FDA said that rabbits are the healthiest meat that people have in their normal consumption. So, and I know rabbits aren't really in a lot of people's normal consumption, but just the same, they're really a healthy choice.
They are really healthy animals. Now, a lot of people look at eating woodchuck with like disdain, you know, But woodchuck is a lot like rabbit. Tastes very similar. They're vegetarians. You know, the meat's actually really good. And a lot of people think of them as like eating rats, you know, the same sort of shit. But honestly, woodchuck is a good source of meat. And, you know, I spend my whole life just running woodchucks off. Let's just say that.
Yes.
Trying to get rid of the woodchucks in my property. You know, they just love your garden. They'll always figure out a way to get in there, man. But one of the things I found
digging my fences deeper and building higher mm-hmm. fences and you know, I thought I was so good and whatever. And then I'm like staking out like and they're smart. Like I had to like really hide and set up hides and I'd have to look in different places. So if I shoot at one and it doesn't work out, that shooting spot is gone. Cause it's no done. Joke, anytime I watch the woodchuck will come out and he'll be staring right where I shot from, you know, and he'll keep looking mm-hmm. over there. Where are you? Are you there? Are you there? And then when I come around and get him mm-hmm. from the other side, you know, it works out, but you can't use the,
right.
and you're thinking they're not that smart. They're that smart. They're always watching. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you jerk, you know? And so that's the thing, like the first time you shoot at them, you got the big window, you know, they're oblivious to whatever. They don't worry about the humans. But if you take your shot and mm-hmm. miss, it's going to end bad for you because that guy's going to be on guard and be ready from there on out. So, you know, something to be aware of. Just know that, you know, take your shot, make it count because they're a little sharper than you might think. And that or they're just outsmarting mm-hmm. me. Anyway, I did set up where I'm out there like laying in the grass and you know, it's tall grass because I let the yard grow a little bit and I'm sneaking up, mm-hmm. crouching on them. That guy, I had a 4-foot fence. He just climbed up over the side and right over the top. And I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. A woodchuck? You can't. That's not fair.
You wouldn't think that. Yeah. Right.
But you put a couple bullets in him. He didn't, you know, with the 22, he didn't get over the fence so easy that time.
It was a little bit more difficult.
Yeah. It's a little more difficult.
And one of the things that I found kind of helps discourage the woodchucks from getting in the garden is when you build a fence, you know, I build wire fences, you know, either, you know, some sort of a chicken wire type thing with posts. if you don't have a top rail on your fence, you know, and let that fence just kind of wobble. Yeah. They don't like that as much. They don't like going over that. If there's a log or a board at the top holding your fence post together, they use that to pull themselves up and over. Right. Doesn't stop them, but it definitely discourages them a little bit from getting in there. Also, I have dogs that love to chew up woodchucks, so that's, you know, that's
you said it's your small tiny dog that does the best job, right, with tracking them down.
Yeah, I've got a bigger herding dog, an Australian Shepherd, and you know, he loves chasing the woodchucks, but when he gets up close to them, he doesn't have that killer instinct. You know, he's more of a defense dog than a hunting dog. But I've got a little dog that I have to admit I really never liked it. You know, it was kind of one of those yappy dogs the wife wanted and was not happy with it. But then man, when she gets out in the woods and catches those woodchucks, man, she just fucks them up, man. She really does. She'll go down right in the hole after them and pull babies out of there and chew them up. She's a little monster when it comes to that sort of stuff. So she's earning her keep now. I can't say anything bad about her anymore.
You can't complain about that.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you guys are building like a food plot for animals, you know, specifically smaller game animals, one of the things to keep in mind is you want to do the opposite of what you do with your garden. You want to have kind of, like you were saying, higher grass around the food plots. Because it's going to give those animals kind of a little bit of cover where they feel comfortable coming out, you know. Yeah. And then, you know, they'll kind of watch the food plot, you know, and look around where they feel safe. And then they'll go out and out into the open. And if you can sit there waiting for them in a place where you've got a little bit of cover, you know, they'll walk right out in front of your rifle. So, you know, I really don't really do a lot of work to keep the grass from getting tall around my gardens, around my fences. Mm-hmm. It keeps, mm-hmm. you know, bugs out. It keeps rodents out. But when it you're does. Setting up a food plot to attract the animals,
it's the opposite. Know,
that's a great way to do it. It's the opposite, right? Right.
Another thing, when you're laying out your food plot, you might want to consider where is going to be my hiding spot. Where am I going to be able to safely shoot without, you know, having to worry about what's behind it, and think of the angles and you know, how you want to be, that you're not shooting back at your house, or you're able to be up in a tree where you're shooting down at the animal, you know, somewhere you can safely shoot and that'll be easy mm-hmm. for you, and easy for you to have concealment, and easy for you to, you know, to be effective as a hunter. You know, think of your dream hunting situation and lay out your food plot accordingly. If you put a little thought in beforehand, you can have, you know, better outcomes time after time, you know, in the future. So, like you said, making the animal feel comfortable, but also setting yourself up to have, you know, the opportunity to really, you know, move in safely and securely will, you know, make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. You know, another thing to keep in mind when you're clearing your land and setting these food plots up is leaving a few mature trees up, especially trees that are going to attract things like squirrels. I know a lot of people don't go for a hunting squirrel and don't go for eating squirrel. I think that's a stupid idea to have in your mind that you're not going to eat a squirrel. But a lot of things like oak, hickory, chestnut trees, those really, you know, those kind of nut trees are really going to keep a lot of squirrels coming through. And having a couple of bigger mature trees out in the open is going to give you a lot of good good views on things that are coming through, like the squirrels and some of the larger game birds and things like that. Mm-hmm. Nut trees and also you had mentioned earlier fruit trees. Deer really love fruit trees, like you said, apple trees, peach trees, pear trees, whatever grow in your area.
Well, one
you
of know, the they things love though, those fruit trees. Deer even they'll eat the wood. I mean, they'll chew on the branches and whatever with the apple tree and just right down. I come out and would be, you know, in New York, I had a bunch of apple trees and man, they would just eat those things down where I'm like, I don't know if the tree's going to live, you know? So it can be a little frustrating, but if you put enough out there and you know, you kind of have to buy them a little more mature. What I've found, if you're trying to go the opposite way where you're keeping the deer out of your apple trees so you can eat apples, that's the reason a lot of people grow apple trees, it turns out.
Believe it or not, yeah.
I have planted garlic around the base of it. And that really did a good job. Somebody had told me, we used to hang a bell from the branches. So the deer would go out and he would like try and snack on the apples and they'd hear the bell ring and that would kind of freak him out a little bit. That actually worked. But we really had the best.
It doesn't sound like something that would work. That's
planting garlic, around the base of it. So if you're trying to go the opposite way, because some of you, I imagine, are cursing us right now going, are you kidding me? All I do is try and keep the deer out of my fruit trees. And I get that. And that has its place.
Right.
We're just, that's not this episode. But I'm telling you, planting garlic. So obviously, planting garlic is not what you want to do anywhere near where you're trying to bring in wildlife. That's another secret of the pros right there.
Right. But, you know, really it comes down to what your property is, you know, how your property is set up. You know, if you've got 20 acres, if you've got 1 acre, the types of things that you're going to do. You're going to want to provide food and resources for these animals to attract them. You know, even setting up things like bird feeders and stuff like that is going to attract wildlife. And there's, you know, there's a lot of birds that are edible, you know, that aren't tiny little animals, but you know, not maybe not turkey size, But, you know, there's some larger birds that you can take if you're really hungry, you know,
big bird shot for, whatever,
for a reason. You know. Delicious, right?
I was just poking you in the ribs there a little bit. I wasn't actually, that's not, you know.
Yeah. But you know, when we set up our properties, a lot of the time we think about how to protect our vegetables and things like that more than we do trying to keep animals out. You know, it's
right.
If you've got a half acre, you might want to focus on keeping the animals off of your property so you can grow vegetables rather than trying to draw them in.
Right. Right.
But you know, it's up to you. It's up to how you want to do things and how you want to survive. You know, if you're an avid hunter, maybe setting up your property for wildlife is more important than setting it up for gardening.
Well, I think it definitely comes down to, like you just said, how much land you actually have. You know, affects everything. You know, a lot of times, you know, certain areas land is cheap and it's easy to come by, but it seems less and less in America, right? That's you know, we're definitely losing that battle of free land. I think George Soros owns it all now, but you know, who knows?
Yeah. So that sounds good. Now, that's all I got for the game, for the drawing game in. Now, let's talk real quick about some fencing.
All right.
There's a lot of ways to fence in your garden and fence in your property even. And one of the things that I've started to do now is growing just pricker bushes in general. You know, great pricker bushes are, you know, things like raspberries and blackberries are great for that. If you set them up around your perimeter, it's going to kind of keep people hesitating to cut through your yard, you know, in a situation like that. I know a lot of people, a friend of mine was telling me that he had just bought a new house out, you know, up in the mountains there and had some property cleared out. And he was having a cup of coffee on his front porch and saw some asshole walking across his field with a shotgun, like hunting in on his property. Yeah. Like, what the fuck, dude? You know? Oh, you've been hunting here for years.
I have permission for the owner.
Yeah.
I hear that all the time. And I'm like, no, you don't.
I am the owner, dickhead.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't. Yeah. So, I mean, so keeping hunters off of your property, I feel very hesitant to tell people that they can't hunt on my land. But when it comes to strangers that I don't know, you know, I don't want you walking through my property with a fucking rifle. You know what I mean? Get the fuck out of here. If I know you, I can invite you over and say, you know, if you want to, you know, do some deer hunting, you can come by and use the woods by my house and, you know, no problems. But, you know, if I know you, I don't want just random assholes walking through my property, you know, so
you're not getting
so when it
my
comes
buck.
To fencing,
right.
Right. When it comes to fencing, you know, you want to be able to kind of protect your property from, you know, from people just happen, you know, walking through. And so you want to have corridors for wildlife to come through, but you also want to be able to see. You want to be able to see where those corridors are from wherever, your living room or your kitchen, when you look out your window. You know, you want to be able to keep track of what and who is coming through your property. And I think that's, you know, that's something that you can do just by, you know, just by setting up your property with fences in the right spots, you know? But, you know, pricker bushes and things like that, they don't work out well for fences around your gardens, because the stuff that is going to eat your garden is going to be the stuff that walks right through those pricker bushes.
And is down. Yeah.
What's
no,
that?
That's the
What's
negative.
That story about Brer Rabbit and Brer Fox?
Yeah, there you go. So, exactly. I mean, animals, shrubbery is not going to be what deters animals. What I have seen, like I'd mentioned, growing garlic, something like that, that is a deterrent. And again, it's going to protect a small area. You know, it depends how much garlic you're willing to plant. Turns out buying it, not as cheap as you might think. Getting started, but obviously, you know, for every one you plant, mm-hmm. you get like five back, you know, so it multiplies right. year after year. You can kind of build up your inventory. But that said, I had just done, we do a couple of different things for fencing here. And I had just, my wife wanted a huge kind of garden area. I don't know, huge for fenced, I guess is the answer. So what we ended up doing is, I think it's like 150 feet kind of square, like 150 feet on each side. And what I had done was I bought, they call it field fence. Now, if you guys know field fence, it's got big holes. It's like maybe at least 5 inch by 5 inch, you know, big squares. So the bunnies are just like walking through it. They're not even, you know, thinking twice. But I was able to buy that at like 48 inches or something like that. It might even been 60 inches, something like that. And I ran that around the whole perimeter, but then came back. And this is not maybe the best way for everybody. But what I did after that was I bought rabbit fence. Now, rabbit fence is you can buy it, I know at Tractor Supply, like 28 inches or 40 inches tall. Again, if I was using it standalone, I'd want at least the 40 inches. But what I was able to do is buy the 28 inch and then put it right against the other field fence. So with that, and then I used hog rings. Have you ever used hog rings?
No, they're, I don't even know what
they
that
use
is.
It. Yeah, me either. Till somebody just told me, they were like, well, why aren't you using hog rings? And I'm like, what are you talking about? So they use it for, like upholstery with furniture and I think with furniture, but also with like your car upholstery and that kind of stuff. But they sell a pair of pliers and these little metal clips that you just twist and put together. Anyway, worked out great to put, you know, you buy a bag of 1,000 clips for like $8 or something like that. And I sit out there in the field like an idiot and I'm putting the fences together. But the thing is, with the two fences combined, I was able to have something really rigid that you couldn't just lift up and slide underneath. Now, again, you know, some places I know in New York, I had to dig a trench and bury the fence like 6 or 8 inches or even 10 inches in order to be effective. But where I am now, the ground is a lot, you know, tougher, so that I found that I was able to just, you know, go right to the ground. But it's so rigid being the two fences combined that animals weren't just picking it up and sneaking under. And so far, it's been working out good. Now, that stopped the rabbits and the small animals like that. But then on the flip side, you still have to worry about deer. So I did taller posts and I ran electric fence wire around the top. So far, I haven't even bothered to, you know, set up the electric part. I just ran the wire going up 8 feet tall, like in foot increments to keep the deer from jumping in. And that's worked out. That was, I want to say, a cost-effective way, but I hate to say it. That big garden, that cost me about $1,200 worth of fence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's it's what do
you
not. Think
this, you said 100 foot, 150 by 150 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good size plot.
That's a big plot. And most people, honestly, they grow enough excess when they're doing that large of an area that they're kind of like, well, I'll let some wildlife come in and take what they take, but they're not going to take it all.
Right.
You know, you see the big cornfields on the side of the road and they're not, you know, there's no fence. You're like, well, how do they keep the deer?
And there's always deer out there. Yeah, they don't. The deer are coming through and getting what they want. But, you know,
and they take what they
when
want.
You have that sort of size.
It depends. Yeah. You know, the crop that we had is, you know, valuable enough that you didn't want to lose it to the animals that it's worth having the fence. So that's, you know, you weigh out what you're doing. Honestly, that garden, in my case, my wife has a bit of a flower farm going. And flowers aren't as cheap as you might think. And some of them are, you know, annuals or whatever. And, you know, you're stuck where you gotta, you know, you gotta really get the most out of it. You can't lose it to, you know, to animals. So, but again, mm-hmm. it depends what you're trying to do. If money, again, it's all money and time, you know, you outweigh what you have
right.
and available to you, and you do things accordingly. But definitely think about what you're doing. Think about what's effective. You know, I was into barbed wire, would have been a great option for the top, but my wife's like, oh, you're out at work and I'm not dealing with animals getting stuck in the barbed wire. And I have to go out and, you know, fight it off kind of thing, you know, cut it right. out, whatever, you know, is involved in that instance. And I've had friends who have horses and goats and they're like, never use barbed wire because, you know, pulling an animal out of there is never anything you want to do. Again, it you decide what's right for you. Just know there's options out there, you know, for you to, you know, find the best way to do it.
Yeah. Now, this might be common sense. You made a good point earlier. But when it comes to trying to be cost effective, obviously the biggest plot with the least amount of fence is going to be a square. You know, the longer and longer you make a rectangle, the more fence you're going to have to use for a smaller amount of land. You know, so if you're trying to be cost effective, you know, a square is the best way to go.
Mine ended up
square footage.
Right. That one ended up being more like a trapezoid. And what it was the tree line ended up dictating, you know, how I had to shape it. But that's, you know, you do, but like you said, spending money, you want to get the most bang for your buck, and a square seems to be, you know, the way to do it, but you know, you do what you gotta. And also, I mean, I know in my case with that one, it was how can I get the tractor in and maneuver and be able to get close to the edges and get in with the tiller and different things where I can still move, but I'm not losing square foot of garden area, you know? So that's all something to consider and weigh out. But that's basically what I got.
So I'm starting to finally get some good produce coming in every day now.
Yeah, like that.
Past my time for asparagus, but I'm on to the tomatoes are just starting to ripen up. All the
you're killing me, dude. We're coming to the end of our tomato season. I was at the farmer's market.
Oh, really?
Yesterday.
I've only had three. And the wife's I've got
all
bushes
like,
and bushes full of green tomatoes.
Yeah. They're like, oh, we ran to the end of tomatoes. Nobody's got tomatoes anymore. And I'm like, yeah, now we're on to watermelons and peppers. And it's about an okra is actually the big thing here. And tobacco.
I haven't grown
about
okra.
Coming,
I tried to grow okra this year, but it just didn't work out. I don't know if I bought, you know, crap seed or if I did something else wrong, but it never even started coming up this year.
Not being a Southerner and knowing how things work, we ended up with a bunch of like 8 or 9 inch long okra that are like hard as rocks that you can't even cut with a knife. And you're like, what the heck? So I'm talking to the ladies at the farmer's market yesterday and they're like, yeah, okra is a everyday thing. You have to be out there picking it every single day. And as soon as they're, you know, 2 inches long or whatever, you pick them and you get them inside. And the one lady's like, I like to go to about 3 or 4 inches, but nobody's like, I like to go to 8 inches and whatever. Cause yeah, it just turns into a rock. It's like a squash or whatever, where you just have like a, you know, hard, impossible, you know, you're out there with the cleaver trying to get through it. I don't know. Right. It's not good, but I don't know. Teach his own, right? Live and learn. That's what they say. Mm-hmm. I think
this is
so
the second year I've grown corn. You know, I grew a lot. I've got a lot of eggplant this year, and there's one vegetable I hate, man. It's eggplant. I can't stand it. My wife wanted it. She loves it, but I mean, I'm never gonna eat that shit, and it just keeps coming in. You know, like
That, and then every people are like, oh, it's not horrible eggplant. If you fry it. And I'm like, yeah, nothing is horrible if you fry it, right? I mean, that's
If you deep fry dog shit, you can eat it.
You can eat it.
Like anything, wow. You deep fry. You fry it, yeah.
Especially you fry it in animal fat.
I like
come
my
on.
Raw vegetables and yeah.
Yeah, if, that ain't
I
it.
Love raw right. vegetables, and if you, yeah, eggplant is not the one to eat raw.
Yeah,
but if any of you guys have some recipes for eggplant that can make it palatable, let me know. But yeah, I haven't been able to enjoy it. I eat it. Don't get me wrong. I eat just about anything, but I don't like it.
That's it.
But
so, all right, that's what I got. So you guys know you have ideas. You have eggplant recipes, whatever you want to share with us. You can email us at preppingbadass@gmail.com. Now, we don't always respond right away. Sometimes also I'll read them and be like, oh, that's a Kevin email. And, you know, I kind of let it sit, and Kevin's like a once a week checker kind of guy, and they take a little bit to, you know, get responded to and whatever, but we definitely respond to everybody, and we're into, you know, hearing what you guys have to say. We definitely appreciate it. You also want to get in touch with us maybe a little sooner. You could try joining the Prepping Badass Facebook group, or you could also, we have a Facebook page. That's like Survival Prepping, I think it is. I don't even know. No, it's Prepping Badass. And anyway, you can also email us at preppingbadass@gmail.com, I was saying. And I think that's it. So the with that, stay safe. Well, no, you could also Patreon. I'm forgetting everything here.
Oh, that's
you
right.
Enjoying the show, you might want to support us on Patreon at patreon.com/preppingbadass, where if you donate as little as $1 a month, you can get a badass patch that, I don't know, that looks like something. I don't know. It's got a cool logo, whatever. Anyway, with that, stay safe, and we'll talk to you guys next week. All right. So what else you got? You.
Oh, well, tell me about your truck here. You got your new truck. What kind is it?
Oh, we got the, it's 2011 Ram 1500, big 35 inch tires. 'Cause I don't know why you wouldn't want that. I actually just had to get a speedometer calibrator to, set things up to make them match up. 'Cause otherwise I'm going like, you know, it says 55 and I think I'm going 62 or something like that. And,
oh, it's not quite accurate, huh? Yeah. You don't want to get in trouble for that. Yeah.
And I was told you can go to the dealer and they're like, oh, that's not a factory size tire. Screw you. We can't do it. But there's special things you can order to make it happen. So
ways you can do it.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm embracing the redneck life. There is what I'm saying.
Yeah. How's that Dodge doing? Are you still have that Dodge pickup?
So the Dodge, the rear end gave out. That was thing. So that's what pushed me into buying a new truck. And by new, I mean 2011. Because that's about as close as I'll ever get to a $50,000 truck, right? Anyway, so I just bought a equipment trailer. You guys know I have a tractor, like a Kubota or something, bucket, whatever, tiller and bush hog and that kind of crap. So I was like, man, it'd be cool if I could go make some money. So it'd be cool if I had a trailer and whatever, could go and go hustle with it, I guess. So I think I'm all cool. I take my crappy, rusty old 96 Dodge that's so full of New York rust, it's unbelievable. The leaf springs had been pushing up through the back bed, and I had to put new shackles in the back to hold it all. It's a disaster, right? And I'm like, all right, I can go get this trailer. I get this cool equipment trailer, like 20-foot, you know, I'm the man. And I'm driving it home and the freaking rear end just gives out and I'm stuck on the side of the road. And I'm like, that's it. Yeah. With the trailer. So the upside is I was able to load the truck onto the trailer that I was pulling. And I called up one of my buddies that had a dually and was like, oh, and he's like, I'll go home and get my trailer. I'm like, I don't need it. All I need is you to just bring your trailer hitch and your pickup and tow me home. And the truck's been a fight where I'm doing repairs on it all the time. But I finally decided, I was like, you know, it hadn't left me on the side of the road. You know, that's the kind of end. I don't like when I'm standing there and it's 98 degrees outside and I'm standing there for hours waiting for somebody to save me. That's like too far, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, I can't handle things like that. I'm just saying I don't want to put myself in a position like that. You know, as a prepper, I'm like, no, that ain't going to work for me. So I finally broke down and, you know, went and bought a reasonably new truck and, you know, kind of moved myself into the right direction. And of course, it's a little bigger and a little cooler than, you know, nice aftermarket exhaust. Mm-hmm. Sounds good, you know, whatever. Nice, a little redneck. Nice. You know, I want to get the Randy Marsh for president. I thought this was America sticker on the back of it or something. And, you know, let people know I'm a man's man.
You're not going to be flying the Trump flag and the American flag off either side of the truck.
But, you know, I mean, that's an option, right? I'm in the South. They still fly rebel flags down here even. It's bad.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to quite get associated with that. It comes with too much negative connotation, you know? You end up by. Right. And I figured the Trump flag is just as bad. I don't know. Man, it's bad here. I have people who I had looked at a house here and one of the neighbors is like flying like the KKK flag in the front lawn. And I'm like, that's even a thing. Like I didn't even.
In your front lawn?
In there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm like, you know, embrace it, I guess. And it's funny. My realtor's nice black lady and whatever. And we just switched it around because they sent somebody over. Oh, this house isn't for sale. You can't buy this house. And we were just playing it up like she was the one going to buy it, you know, my realtor. And because she's like, no, I'm moving in. And we had a good time with it. You know, you got to keep people guessing, right?
That's right.
I was like, yeah, I can't live next to those people. But it ended up, it was a little too far from where I was working and, you know, whatever. I was like, I can't do it. But it did have like a 2-acre pond. And she's like, I got a ton of black friends that would come over and fish in your pond every day. We could really keep your neighbors guessing. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, that would happen.
There you go.
I was like, all day. You know, I was like, I would have a barbecue every day. Y'all be coming over and it'd be good. I'm like, because, you know, if I can't piss off somebody, you know, why even live, right?
That's, right, you know. Exactly. I live for pissing off my neighbors, you know?
So
I had somebody call the cops on me a couple years ago because I was setting off my friend was setting off dynamite in the backyard just for fun.
And, who hasn't seen that
apparently
play out?
Apparently people get upset when you're blowing shit up in your backyard, so I don't know. The cops showed up, but by the time they got here, everything would have been blown up and it was
you just
got
to be like, I heard that too. What?
Yeah. I don't know what that was. I think somebody was setting off fireworks. You know,
oh,
I don't know.
My Lord. Why are all these explosions and burn marks in your yard? I don't know. That's weird, right?
So strange. Yeah. No,
yeah,
but
here we have like Tannerite and all that. Everybody's blowing up things all the time. You know, we're shaking the windows.
Yeah. So I've been working on now. I've got a little stream on my back property, and I've been working on, you know, just kind of damming it up a little bit, make a little pond. You know, and it's coming along because I've got ducks. So I've got pools and little things like that for them, but I like to have a, you know, somewhat natural environment for them that's a little bit more conducive. I don't think it's going to be big enough that I'm going to be able to stock it with fish, but my neighbor just built a pond and, he's really got it set up nice. He had his friend come over with a backhoe and just dug a giant hole, put a $200 liner in there, and his kid went and stole a koi fish from somebody's pond. So now he's got a big, like, 3-foot koi fish. I've never seen one this big, just swimming around in his pond out there. Those things are,
I guess, they're big money, right?
Yeah, they're not cheap. But I don't know why you'd want. I guess you can eat koi, but I don't know why you'd want to eat something that valuable.
I think people who cook food like you and I might don't go for koi fish. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some kind of sushi end of it that people go way. It's like the sushi. That's where that all works out. And that's where the price kind of gets up there. But we had looked at aquaponics and stuff. We had talked about it for the podcast in the past and whatever. Everybody sells here. It's very common. Like Facebook's filled with those big plastic water containers, you know, the big white ones with the cage on it. I don't know. They're everywhere around me. And setting up aquaponic systems with those, the idea keeps coming up in my head, but I just, it's another project, you know, it's like more money laid out. It's like, all right, I can do another $600 project. And yeah, it's going to be another 3 days of work, you know, to get that set up and kind of going. And it just, it's one more thing.
You know, with those
thing,
aquaponics,
you know?
The more I look at it, those aquaponics, that has to be your whole life. You know what I mean?
It seems like it.
Because you miss one day working on it, fucking with it, a pump goes out or something, that's it. Everything's dead. You know, all the
like
fish
rabbits,
are dead.
You know,
all the plants are
another,
dead. Yeah. You just
it's
have
another
to be
thing
constantly
it's
doing
like,
it.
You know, it's like what projects can own me, you know? And that's, you know. And I like
even,
to play with
even
guns
just trying
and pickup
to keep up with
trucks,
a vegetable
so.
Garden.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I want to play with guns
and
pickup
even keeping
trucks,
up with anything.
Know?
Yeah, exactly. That's something, you know, what do they say? Make money doing what you know and pay people to do what they, you know, what they know how to do. Yeah. But, you know, I try and be somewhat of a Renaissance man in the sense that I could, you know, have a little bit of knowledge on everything. But, you know, it's a little bit those aquaponic setups. I just you know, I love the idea of them. It just seems that like it's a, you know, that owns your life, you know, those things. And it's a lot of work to keep it working right.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know. I go out and do my electrician thing and make my money and then, pay the grocery store instead of the off-grid.
Exactly.
You know, life. But you do what you can do. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Got to keep the lights on.
All right, I guess we'll go out and do some work, get life going here, but I don't know. All right.
Yeah, I got to get out and feed all the animals, so I'll talk to you later on, bud.
All right, later.
The Survival and Basic Badass Podcast is a proud member of the Self Defense Radio Network.
Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors, every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Ooh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV